Yeah. All glories to the sum of devotees. All glories to the sum of devotees. All glories to the sum of devotees. Glory to Shri Guru and Shri Guru. So we're reading in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 4, Text 8, which is a mantra prayer. I'll only read part of it, and in the sound of it, I'll only read some of it. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Nunam Bhagavato Brahman. Hare Adbhuta Karmanaha. Durvibhavyam ivabhati. Kavabhischapi chastitam. Nunam Bhagavato Brahman. Hare Adbhuta Karmanaha. Durvibhavyam ivabhati. Kavabhischapi chastitam. Nunam, still insufficient. Bhagavataha, of the personality of Godhead. Brahman, O Lord Brahmana. Hare, of the Lord. Adbhuta, wonderful. Karmanaha, one who acts. Durvibhavyam, inconceivable. Iva, like that. Abhati, appears. Kavihi, even by the highly learned. Cha, also. Api, in spite of. Chastitam, being endeavored for. Translation. O learned Brahmana, the transcendental activities of the Lord are all wonderful, and they appear inconceivable because even great endeavors by many learned scholars have still proved insufficient for understanding them. Purport. The acts of the Supreme Lord in the creation of Just this one universe appears inconceivably wonderful. And there are innumerable universes, and all of them aggregated together are known as a created material world, and this part of his creation is only a fractional portion of the complete creation. The material world stands as a part only. Ekam Sing Stito Jagat. Supposing that the material world is a display of one part of his energy, the remaining three parts consist of the Vaikuntha Jagat, or spiritual world, described in the Bhagavad Gita as Madhama or Sanatana Dham, or the eternal world. We have marked in the previous verse that he creates and again winds up the creation. His action is applicable only in the material world because the other greater part of his creation, namely the Vaikuntha world, is neither created nor annihilated. Otherwise, the Vaikuntha Dham would not have been called eternal. The Lord exists with Dham. His eternal name, qualities, pastimes, entourage, and personality are all a display of his different energies and expansions. The Lord is called Anadi, or having no creator, and Adi, or the origin of all. We think in our own imperfect way that the Lord is also created, but the Vedanta informs us that he is not created. Rather, everything else is created by him. Narayana Parovyatat. Therefore, for the common man, these are all very wonderful matters for consideration. Even for great scholars, they are inconceivable, and thus such scholars present theories contradictory to one another. Even for the insignificant part of his creation, this particular universe, they have no complete understanding as to how far this limited space extends, or how many stars and planets are there, or the different conditions of those innumerable planets. Modern scientists have insufficient knowledge of all this. Some of them assert that there are 100 million planets scattered all over space. In a news release from Moscow dated 2-21-60, the following piece of knowledge was relayed. Russia's well-known professor of astronomy, Boris Vorontsov-Belomilova, said that there must be an infinite number of planets in the universe inhabited by beings endowed with reason. It could be that life similar to that on Earth flourishes on such planets. Doctors of chemistry Nikolai Zirov, covering the problem of atmosphere on other planets, pointed out that the organism of a Martian, for instance, could very well adapt itself to normal existence with a low body temperature. I think I was supposed to stop. Oh, one more. He said that he felt that the gaseous composition of Martian atmosphere was quite suitable to sustain life of beings which have been adapted to it. I'm supposed to stop there. Mom Vishnu, but I should start with the Shema to go to the office on Wednesday, so I sort of did a little Shri Prabhupada has emphasized over and over again that one of the qualities of God is that he is not manufactured. And here we see also that the creation also, the eternal part of the creation, of which is three-fourths of everything, is also not manufactured. So these coming discussions on the creation are pretty amazing. And it's described here that it's so amazing that even the scientists can't comprehend it, and they just simply say there's no explanation, or they make up something, and then they all disagree on each other's made-up reasons for it all. But they still try to study. You find the scientists are always looking for the beginning of this, and how did this start, how did that start. If they just would go to the Bhagavatam, all the answers would be there for them. The different vimanas or different transitory vehicles throughout the different planets and universes are all described. The demigods, the kanaras, all the different living entities on different planets are described. Everything is there. They could save a lot of money and probably a few lifetimes of study if they would just resort to study this Bhagavatam, because it is a wealth of knowledge, even of the most inconceivable topics. Of course, there's always one class of offenders who simply say there is no God, or they might say that I'm God, but that will always be there. But we understand here that the devotees understand that we're simply a very insignificant portion of this universe, as is described in this first paragraph. It reminds me of the discussion that Prabhupada had with in the presence of Tamal Krishna Goswami when he was president of some temple, and Prabhupada could sense that he was getting a little bit proud of that position, and so he started with the universes, and he described, and there's this universe and that universe, and then there's this big planet, and then on this planet there's this United States, and on this United States there's this one little town, San Diego or whatever it was, and in this one little house in San Diego there's this one Tamal Krishna Goswami, you know, just like, woo, cut down to size. So the scientists needed also hear that we should be cut down to size. Become a little bit humble and a little bit submissive. First, admit and then submit to the Lord of everything, whom we hear about so wonderfully in this Bhagavatam. And now we're just a little bit going into this discussion of creation, as it was described the other day. It's discussed many times throughout the Bhagavatam. But it's exciting to hear, and it's also... it's very satisfying to have all this knowledge. So why don't the scientists, why don't they start doing some investigation in the hearts of the devotees and evaluate and compare them to the hearts of the materialists and see who is really content. The devotees are content because we have all this knowledge. We know who the Supreme Lord is. Don't have to manufacture him. The scientists simply agitating their mind, not knowing anything, trying to figure it all out, and wasting so much brain power and energy. So we should be very satisfied with hearing this over and over again. And maybe someday it'll really sink in that we are just simply a servant of the servant of the servant. We actually should be kind of embarrassed that we have to learn how to serve. We are eternal servants, and now we have to go through this whole process of being cut down to size and learning how to serve the Supreme Lord. So therefore, Prabhupada has come and taught us deity worship, taught us about the Holy Name. And so we should definitely understand that Krishna is very kind because he doesn't come here very often and relay all this information personally, but he sends the spiritual master to help us, to train us, to guide us, and to help us become nice, submissive devotees again. Therefore, our daily sadhana is so important because this is when we actually begin to purify our heart. We were reading this morning after Mangalarti, very important discussion, I think it was in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, about how just in the holy name, all this can be revealed to us. If we really submit to the holy name, because the holy name, the Lord is present there. All this knowledge is there, and it's within ourselves. We just have to become purified by this holy name, get some kind of attraction to our sadhana in the morning, especially of chanting very sincere, deeply felt rounds. So this will keep that connection with Krishna flowing so that we can gradually have some revelations of who we are and who Krishna is. Actually, the whole goal of the Vedic culture is to travel, is to travel beyond all these universes and travel to the spiritual realm, to Goloka or Vrindavan. Past all these heavenly planets, past Mars, forget Mars, this old red planet. By the looks of it, lately they've been sending back pictures of Mars, I think, of some rover or something's going there. Looks really boring. I wouldn't want to take my vacation there by any means. And then what less? The moon is full of dust. Go to Goloka, there's plenty of dust. Rudge. It covers Krishna when he's walking coming back from the cow fields, the dust of the hooves of the cows is covering him, making him look beautiful with all the minerals and different colors on his body. Let's go to Goloka, where there's just simply cows and simple life. Forget these other planets. But we see that the Vedic culture is based on wanting to go back to this spiritual realm. Culture actually expresses people's beliefs. It's a display through their music, through their worship, through all their activities, through even their architecture, through their dress, through their food. And we can see that, how this Vedic culture is so rich in all these things. But what is the center? What is the hub? The focus point is Krishna. Our music, our dance, our food, everything is centered around Krishna. And all of our activities are meant to please him. This requires a very big revolutionary change of consciousness, which we see does happen by the association of someone like Srila Prabhupada. So since time immemorial, people have been wanting to travel to other planets. There's always been that interest. I was reading recently that there's even in the cave-dwelling archaeologists and everything, in their discoveries, they find pictures of little aliens on the walls of the caves. So people have wanted to find out what other life is going on, what other kind of people are there. Can there be communications with these other living entities? And we see, I always remember that wonderful pastime of Parvati when she's wanting to go to Daksha's big celebration, and she's sitting there watching all her friends in these fantastic vimanas, these different airplanes going by, traveling to different universes, coming, and she's going, oh, I want to go, but my father says I can't go, and then she ends up going, kills herself. Anyway, but that desire to meet other living entities and travel is there, because it's said that the variety is the mother of enjoyment. Here we see that even the Russians are describing that, you know, are they interested also in maybe meeting these Martians or going to Mars? So this is something that was very on Srila Prabhupada's mind when he wrote Easy Journey to Other Planets. You consider that was like one of the first books that he ever wrote. And this was at the time when the Space for Race was going on here in America. I think it was 1968 when they so-called landed on the moon and there was so much interest. And so this was a really catchy little title that Prabhupada put on the book, Easy Journey to Other Planets. Because people do, they're interested in what's going on, you know, in these other planets. I think we all have a little bit of a travel lust within us. I know I do. I recently just got back from Africa. My granddaughter she's a photographer, she wanted to get the, you know, pictures of the animals, and my daughter loves animals, so I said, okay, I'll take you to Africa and we'll go on a safari. So we did all that. And the variety, my gosh, variety. The animals, you cannot believe the variety of animals you see in Africa. Just amazing. You think you've seen them all, and then the guy says, oh, and there's that one there. See that one under the tree? Fantastic artwork on the bodies of these animals. I mean, Krishna's, I don't know where he gets these ideas from, but far out designs. I mean, amazing. And all the different kinds of things on top of their heads going this way and that way, and curls going this way and that way. And it just, so that kind of was a satisfaction of wanting some variety. But when we do go to these other countries, the cultures are different, and especially going to another planet, you can imagine the difference. We were having fun. My daughter and I were discussing about when we, and she goes to different countries too, and she says that to adapt to a different custom is like, it's usually kind of hilarious. We could probably write you know, books on different places we've been and trying to figure out washing machines, the different washing machines in all the different countries. I remember in Thailand, it took us hours to figure out how to turn a washing machine on. And, you know, here, people come here and they put their clothes in the dryer thinking they could get washed. And, you know, and then there's, those, you know, of course, going to the restroom in a foreign country, you know. Of course, India, you get your cut off rusty can in the bathroom, you know, that was like shock number one. And in Japan, my daughter says you go in and you have to, it's everything's digital, and you get washed by water, so you have to figure out what temperature of water you want, and you have to push buttons and how to go in and how to flush and all different, you know. So it's quite amazing. But some people can actually go to a different country, or maybe some people can go to a different planet and say, I think I could do this, I think I could live here, right? And then other places you go, other countries you go to, well, no way. No way am I going to live here. So this is interesting to see that how we can adapt or not adapt. But if you study all the different cultures, even if you go to all the different parts of the world, you'll see that there's simply a struggle for existence from one planet to another. Krishna says they're all struggling just to stay alive. So even if the Martians came here, I don't think they'd be any happier, do you? I don't think so. And I think if we go there and try to live, I don't think we'll be any happier on all these other planets. It just doesn't happen here in the material world. It is a struggle. And devotees struggle here also. We're fighting Maya all the time, who's trying to keep us here. Got her clutches on us so tight, making it seem like, oh yes, I want to be here forever. This is a wonderful Western culture. It's so wonderful. I just want to, you know, enjoy like anything. But we're constantly trying to struggle and separate ourselves from this attraction we have for Krishna's lower energy. It's described here that this one little fourth of the creation we're thinking is so fantastic, but it's just simply, you know, piddles compared to the spiritual realm. So we should somehow or other become satisfied within by understanding that we are a simple servant of the Lord. My son-in-law, he teaches at a school, East Side School, and he teaches a subject called human geography, which I never got to take when I don't think we discussed it. But now, because of the global, you know, the closeness of the travel and everything, they study how different parts of the country and things like that can affect your relationships and affect your human interaction and so many different things. Kind of an interesting subject. And I think we've been kind of eyewitness to the influence of different cultures and being on the planet. Because I went to India the first time in 1975, and now I go again, and I'm just like, you know, totally shocked at the influence that the West has had on the East. And now you come to the West, and you come into one of our temples, or go to yoga classes, or go to this and that, you see the influence of the East that's had on the West. It's amazing. So this does go on. But ultimately, we want to infiltrate the world with a culture that is based on simple living and high thinking. And this is what is most beneficial for that soul. When I was in Africa, I always like to take off when I'm in a different country and just visit the villages. So I took off in early morning, went throughout the villages. We were staying at an eco lodge, which was out in the country. And it was amazing how wonderful the people are there. They're so simple, you know. They have mud houses. I always preach when people come to the eco farm. I always say that, you know, I show them Vrinda Devi's temple, I say, actually 50% of the world lives in mud houses. This isn't a rare thing. And it's true. You go out to these villages and they're living in mud houses, a little bit different than I made out here. But and they all have their small little gardens, mostly corn they grow. And they make their own charcoal. They sell it on the highways. They cook and smother the sand, all the wood, and they make charcoal and they sell it. I guess they use it for burning. And they just a different kind of life, very simple, and they depend on their neighbors, which is an amazing thing. You know, you're growing this, I'm growing that, and we can share. It's a very nice year. Prabhupada encouraged that to make our struggle here much more simple. There's so much influence of passion because of the drive for technology and everything, and we see that it just kind of burns on you. So this is definitely an advantage of a simple life in the Vedic culture, especially by an ashram. We went to some ruins in Kenya, and they were from the 13th century. The British discovered them, and they were ruins from an Islamic civilization that came from Ethiopia down, and they settled near the coast, near above Mombasa. Nice temple in Mombasa. You should see it. It's very beautiful. But the ruins were there, and the person took us through, and it was interesting because it was so Vedic-like, actually. They had the priests, I forget the name, what they call the priests in Islam, but he had his house and right next to the temple, and it was like incorporated with the temple, and there was a Gurukula in the temple compounds. And then right next to that was the head guy that runs the whole community. And he has his house with his four wives and different rooms for wives. And then the court was right there. And then outside there's a wall, and outside there were the workers. And so it was actually, you know, arranged very much Varanashram. And then they had the banks, and they had like a room for banks, and they had, it was supposedly all conch shells, all kinds of certain shells. We hear in the Vedic culture how that was their wealth of shells. Because they were near the ocean, it was filled with beautiful shells, and that's what they would trade with. And then there was another bank where they stored their real precious things. And they would trade their conch shells down south for glass beads. And I guess they would make jewelry for ladies and all different things of glass beads. That was what they figured was their wealth. So it was interesting to see that it was very, very much similar in value. The center was the temple, and where they would, you know, they had the corner of the architecture had certain corners right in the temple room where they would have inside of a little groove, they had a little round thing, and you'd go in there and you would whisper something and it would magnify throughout the whole temple area. And on the sides of that little area, they had little markings, and there were six corners, and that's how many times a day they would say their prayers. And in the Gurukula, they only had five, so in the Gurukula, they only did their prayers five times a day. Anyway, it was very interesting. And to see that, you know, that the culture was very, very rich in religion. Therefore, it held out. And I asked them, I said, was it a peaceful? I said, were there warriors? And I said, was it peaceful? And he says, it was very peaceful. There was no war time and everything like that. I think that finally ended by some famine, or they couldn't get no rain or something like that happened, and so it was covered over very much like Angkor Wat with fig trees and things like that. But it was amazing because it was most of the buildings there still are made out of coral rock, like cement blocks, but they're cut out of coral rock. We went on a motorcycle ride through these sisal fields to a volcanic area on the coast, and they had a cement factory there. They were still cutting the blocks and sending the lime to make cement. But these blocks were still there, you know, after hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years of the structures of these things. And then when we were leaving, we were going to the little compound where they had made a little place where you could buy this and that, made recently. And it was all crumbling. I said, just see, you made this. They were proud of it. It was like 10 years ago, they finished it. And I said, here, these people built thousands of years ago, and it's perfectly all right. And here your so-called technology is crumbling right to dust in front of you. So much for our advanced technological civilization. So some people, you know, this easy journey to other planets, the scientists, of course, are making it very difficult and very expensive. But we understand, Prabhupada says, it is an easy journey back to the spiritual world, although it can be difficult. If we carry anarthas with us, unwanted things, and those unwanted things are, of course, our desires. So if we really want to finish up our business, we really can't enter Goloka unless we end our search for material sense pleasure. So if we're still looking for some pleasure here, you're not going to be able to go back to Goloka Vrindavan. So we have to get rid of these desires gradually, and we can do that by start directing our desires to serve Krishna in different ways, and then we'll see that actually Krishna will gradually erase those desires. And we can then begin to feel some relief, some real pleasure, this higher taste. And Srila Prabhupada has been so kind, he's offered us a non-stop ticket one way back to Vaikuntha and back to the spiritual world, so we'd be really silly not to take it. But there are different securities that you have to go through. We went through many of them. Traveling is not easy these days. Missed many flights because of the security. They're so, you know, particular about the security. And although they did work, their security wasn't so great in one place. In Kenya, my daughter was taking out her iPad and putting it on the thing, and she went, "Wow, what was that?" And when we got through the security, And sitting in the waiting thing, she goes, "What is in this bag?" And lo and behold, we had a hitchhiker, a scorpion that had bit her, had stung her. It was wrapped in some clothes that were thrown on the floor in the eco lodge, and she had thrown it in her bag, and it stung her in the airport. And then we go, "Oh great." And we're looking up on Google that she's going to die, or it said if you start having, can't swallow, you know. But it said the Kenya one is not so bad, it's just going to hurt for like 24 hours. And we thought, oh great, we're going on this 8-hour ride. What are we going to do with this thing? We didn't want to get out in the airport, so we had to flush it down the toilet finally. But so we have to get rid of all these anarthas that will sting us. We can't take on in our luggage back to Vaikuntha all these things that are nasty. We have to get rid of them in this lifetime. And so this is a really important work that we have. And it is made easy, though, by the chanting of this Hare Krishna mantra. It's very, very powerful. It can change the lives of everyone. Like, I went to two beautiful temples, and that one in Nairobi, one in Mombasa, on the coast. And you can see where Prabhupada has brought this culture everywhere, all over the world, and people are taking to it. Thousands of people are chanting Hare Krishna and are attracted to it. It is the tool by which we can finish up our business and get out of here, and skip all these other planets, and just go back to the spiritual world directly. Unless Krishna decides, well, maybe you should go to Mars and preach. So maybe we'll see Pushkar or some of our god brothers and god sisters in Martian bodies will recognize each other and, oh yeah, here we are preaching again, yeah, to Martians. So you never know what Krishna has planned for us, but meanwhile we'll try our best to follow the instructions and have our early morning sadhana and get attracted to the holy name and leave our attractions behind here in the material world. So does anybody have any questions or comments? Mm-hmm. You'd like to add or subtract or your realizations they might have?
Okay, so I'll do the Pranda Linda. It was a nice class, but I'm going to do my thing, right? But so sometimes we hear about how the modern world or any world is full of difficulty. But then you read the Mahabharata and the Ramayana, and it sounds like it was just full of difficulty. And that was the whole plot.
Still in the material world. You got to have some pinches.
Yeah.
You got to have pinches, otherwise you don't want to get out of here. Plus, Krishna has to have a nice drama court to do his thing. So it has to look pretty exciting. You know, so the difficulties that Ram went through, we read it back today, and we love that. We love that story of Ram, right? So he has to have a background for all this to go on. So he made it difficult. Actually, the temples in Nairobi and Mombasa, they have Ram deities. And actually, in one temple in Mombasa, the temple of the Panchatattva is very small. It's like in the middle altar. There's no... Now, I asked about it. I said, why not so much Lord Chaitanya? And they said, because the Ram Leela is so strong. And you don't know a lot about Lord Chaitanya.
So to flip that around a little bit, so we've heard it's the golden age of Lord Chaitanya, and Krishna's appeared in his holy name, and ISKCON is a nice vehicle branch to facilitate the pastimes. So if Krishna's here in this form, how about could we consider how our difficulties in the modern world are also somehow, you know, a positive thing in the same way the difficulties in the Ramayana and Mahabharata?
Oh, definitely.
They could be engaged that way.
Definitely. Yeah. I'm reading Swami Sundar's book about all the difficulties that they went through, you know, in India to start this movement. And it's, yeah, it's just a backdrop for seeing how wonderful this movement is and how you have to work hard and how wonderful everything is. So, yeah, this is all part of Krishna's pastime.
So the more difficulties we have, actually, the more advanced we are, because that's what Queen Clinton said.
That's why frontline preaching is so difficult, that you make more advancement by going out there and battling it out on the front line, yeah. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mataji, for a wonderful class. My question is, how can we relate our travel to a place which is not like related like Africa or some European country somebody want to go and travel to Krishna consciousness? And how can we say, okay, I'm traveling to, let's say, some fun place, but it's somehow related with the Krishna consciousness.
Yeah, join Hare Krishna, see the world. I've traveled all over the world, and I've always related it to Krishna, preaching wherever you go, getting people to chant Hare. I got everyone to chant Hare Krishna. Actually, the man that took us around on one thing, his middle name was Hare, H-A-R-E. There's always preaching, there's always temples to go to and preach, and just being a devotee. People go, one of the guys says, I knew there was something different about you. I knew that, and I told him I was a devotee. So yeah, it's always an opportunity to travel and preach. I got so many ideas for the Eco Farm that I hope to implement. So and there's so many places that we can go up. Actually, we stay with this one family, a very wealthy family, and I was hoping to get some information about Madagascar, because I have this inkling to go to Madagascar and start a temple. He said there's actually no ISKCON temple there, but there's some Hindu temples there. You want to go travel? Pick a place. There's lots left. So, what adventure.
Yeah. If so, if there is no ISKCON or no temple, but there are a lot of fun places in those places, you still want to go there? And I don't know how you're going to preach to unknown people who are not really interested, like, let's say, Disney World. Right? So if you go to there...
The devotees are going there in the parking lot, giving out books, and then they find that they are interested when they read Prabhupada's books. So yeah, we go anywhere and everywhere. I mean, you can hear millions of stories of how devotees have become devotees just because they were... What was that other one? The man to Srivas Pandit, and I went to Burma preaching, and he tells a story how he got the book from somebody else, and... So, yeah, there's unlimited places you can go and unlimited things you can do for Srila Prabhupada. So just pick a place. If half the devotees in this temple went to a different place, even in Florida, think how many more temples we'd have, how many more devotees we'd have. Yeah. And that's exciting. Starting temples, so exciting. Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.